Special guest in studio, Rhett is kind enough to open the Rolodex, or at least the cell phone, to his contacts app, and we say good morning to Corey Sarich. Sir, how are you?
Doing well. How about you guys?
Not bad. It's a Friday.
It's a good day.
The guy that doesn't sleep enough and is hungry, that makes things grumpy Friday morning, isn't here. So here we are. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, thanks for having me.
What have you heard from old Retro these days?
Thanks for the coffee, Sarchy.
Did he have to bribe you to get you in? How did this work?
I could barely find my own coffee this morning. So me finding you one, tough luck on that.
What time do you normally get up?
I normally get up at 7.
Oh, so
I know.
We're pushing our luck with you a little bit.
It's a tough day.
I really like your shirt.
Thank you.
You're not going to put them in the special
shirt? Made in Sask.
Made in Sask. I've got the exact same one. I think probably it's now half the province is wearing those things, would you say?
I think there was, 500,000 made, so half the province has got one.
What about all the exports, though? That's where most of those shirts are going, right?
There must have been a sale on T-shirts somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, how are you doing?
A couple of these around.
Last we chatted, I mean, it was a conversation that for a lot of fans was the view behind the scenes of the horrible accident you went through and the all the hurdles you've had to overcome. That's again a while back that we chatted. How's life?
So Archie still thinks he should be playing.
Well, he should.
No, I gave that up this year. That was last winter. I felt like I could still play. This winter, not so much. Had a little skate this summer. Raced my brother-in-law around the ice, and things weren't good.
But could you
almost blew a groin, almost pulled a hip flexor. So,
but could you beat Nick Grossman in the foot race? That's really where I think there might have been a job.
Wow.
Ooh, yeah. I don't know. I couldn't really beat anybody in a foot race. Maybe I'll challenge him backwards.
The backwards game. That's part of the job.
Stand a little bit of a chance.
Have you been watching the games? Is there an itch at all, or is this normal now?
No, it's pretty normal now. These guys are too fast, too young, too quick, and I know where I fit in, and I fit in right where I am.
So. Could you have, you're more my era hockey.
Yeah.
I'm a little older than you are, but the game has changed a lot, and you played a lot, even a lot of hockey after the rules changed, blah, blah, blah. But it continues to get faster and faster and younger and younger. Would we have even had a chance stepping into the NHL right now? Because I'm not saying that we were not known for fleet of foot.
Well, we're gear too, right?
No, but yeah, it would be a tough. I mean, hook, hold, can open, clutch, grab.
The can opener. How often did you get taught that growing up? Like that was the number one play.
I remember Jerome Engel in Saskatoon giving me a lesson after practice, and then Doug Huda helping me to perfect my craft in Rochester.
Yeah.
So yeah, and, you know, it's a lost art.
It's illegal.
Well, yeah, you can't get away with it anymore. So
also the 3 second hold.
Yeah, that's the
get
one.
A guy, yeah.
Pin him, hold on.
Don't let him move
on the wall.
Oh, I used to take runs at guys all over the place. Cause if you missed them, you'd hook them, hook your way back into the play. You'd grab a jersey and you can't do that anymore. So I don't know if we'd stand a chance or not.
Here's what I'd tell you though. If you were these kids coming up now, you'd be better skaters because they've all had their own skating coaches since they're like 13. It's crazy now.
So thoughts on that too? Because my thoughts on skating, I was never going to be a good skater. I could have had 10 skating coaches. There are genetics involved.
Sure.
Yeah, I took power skating all over the place when I was younger, maybe not from the best coaches, and maybe we didn't do the edging and things, but I was out there and I skated all day, every day. I maxed out.
Yeah, that was...
I got to a certain level when you got legs as long as I do and no engine to drive them. I mean, you're stuck with what you got. You can push as hard as you want. You're not going to go any faster.
Oh, so, it's crazy.
I agree. You're either blessed with it or you're not. And you can improve subtly, but big leaps and bounds, you're not going to make me any faster. There's no way.
You can make a stronger stride and you can improve, but you're not... We were never Matthew Lombardi.
Nope, never.
Well, it's interesting you say that because how much can you actually teach speed? Like, I don't know if you can really, you know, get that much faster. You can improve your stride, but that's not really going to get you that much more speed, right?
No, it's same with training with Rich Hesketh in the summers. You know, ex-decathlete, phenomenal runner. And he talks about all the things he did to improve his stride, to get faster. So we would work on that because it's track-based. I'd run all summer. I run slower than I skate. You know, I am dead last. We would do 100-meter sprints. I knew I was dead last. We practiced a lot. Yeah, my form improved personally. I probably improved my best time. Still dead last.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a tough one.
Kids these days, that's, I mean, the league is a, I don't want to say way younger. It's younger, but the guys making impact at 18 versus 19 now is incredible. And it's what we welcome you in. The first thing that comes to everyone's mouth is like, boy, the speed. You look what Line A's doing. Look what Austin Matthews is doing. Matt Tkachuk, sixth overall. Of course he's got a job on this team. Are you shocked? Could you imagine the rooms these days with so many kids under 22?
Oh, being an old guy, you know, trying to tell stories around the room, who do you relate to? That would be the crazy thing for me is you've got, well, I guess not with me anymore. There's no generation gap because, you know, it's from now it's 20 to 30. It's that decade that's in the room that's sitting there. One thing back to what we were just talking about, could we skate in the league? Yeah, maybe not, but I would be licking my chops out there with the kids that skate around with their heads down. Oh, my God. Maybe I couldn't catch them, but when I did, watch out. I feel like the league has gotten much faster. It's younger. It's sure exciting, but you see some of these hits that are going on out in the game, and kids aren't ready to be body checked. I don't know. Maybe just because there's not as much exposure to it these days.
Because they're protected all the way up? Is that part of the problem? What I mean? Like, that's back in the day that there was, and you call them predatory hits because they were, but that's exactly what you're saying. Yeah, you would have preyed on these kids because guess what? You should have been told if you're going to go through the middle of the ice, 100 miles an hour with your head down, you're going to get your clock cleaned.
That's exactly how it was. And maybe these kids that come in the league these days and are, you know, they have impact right away because there's not that, I don't know. I was scared when I got there. I was intimidated. I don't know. I think maybe that's gone from the game too. Now, you know, they're so confident coming in and that's a great thing, but I know for me, it was like such, you're just trying to get your feet wet. You're trying to, what's it going to be like? It was so different than junior for us. It was so different than even the AHL coming up to the NHL level. And, I feel like it just flows in more consistently.
It's a pretty level playing field because everyone's in shape and
everybody trains all year
round.
They've
got a program from the time you're really young. It's kind of a follow this and this will give you a chance.
Well, the other thing too, when did you guys get your first agent? How old are you?
Like, I was going into my draft year.
So you would have been 17, 18.
I was halfway through my draft year.
Yeah, I was 15, so I was a little younger.
And now that would be late.
Definitely.
And so when you talk about guys being ready and acting the part, well, they have a business manager who's been preparing them since they were 13, 14 to be NHLers. So no wonder they get there and they walk around like they own the joint. They've been talking about this with their business advisor for a half decade.
I think too, my agent, he didn't hardly have anybody that had done it before either. So he was learning just like I was.
He was a personal friend almost. What I know Tim.
Yeah, that's essentially what it was. He was a young guy too, kind of cutting his teeth in the business, and he was figuring it out as much as I was. So
there's good and bad to
different.
Both.
It's different. It's just completely different today. But like you say, it's like someone has written the manual. We've seen so many players go through it. Everybody knows how to work out. Yeah. Everybody knows how to do. Now it's to find the little things that make you different, that make you stand out. I think that's kind of the craft within the game now for those kids that are going to be top players. It's what makes the difference now because everybody seems to be training at the same level.
Nutritionists, you got skating coaches, you have agents at a young age, you'd have skills coaches. You're right. I mean, it's not like guys are going in the gym and just looking for weight to lift. They know exactly what they're doing, what day are we on, what tomorrow am I doing different muscle groups, like.
I'm an old fart and the grumpy old man, but the problem I have with all that is that is great. There's a blueprint for you to follow. But when you take a kid and give him that, when does he learn to want it? Right? When does that, and I think that's how kids can differentiate themselves is if a kid's doing it on his own because he wants to, that's great. But if you're just, no, this is what you have to do, you don't learn that desire and drive and want.
Well, and part of that too, I wonder, like, you know, Corey, maybe you could talk on this, but to play year round, and you know, same with you, Red. I mean, as a kid, you had the kind of the summer where you got away from hockey, and then you come back in the winter and you develop that love for the game. And when it's getting jammed down your throat, I wonder if kind of that love to play hockey goes away. I mean, oh, I got to strap on the equipment again. I just did this 4 days in a row.
Right? Yeah, it has to. I know as a professional athlete, you try to make it a year-round thing, and it's tough. After the season ends, you need a break. So to be a young kid, to be someone who hasn't even reached their teens yet, and this is being pushed upon you, that's difficult. For myself, the winters were too short growing up. You know, we had Halloween is when we started, and if the ice was still in past March 1st, wow, you were having a big year. And what's that add up to? 5 months?
5 months.
Yeah. That was my hockey season. So every time there was a chance to skate, I was out there because who wanted to play ball in the spring in Saskatchewan? No, thank you.
Flames win 3-2 last night. Corey Sarich in studio. It's Rhett Warner, Ryan Pinder, Bill Nault, and of course, Jason DeForest. We asked you about the kids. We asked you about life and retirement. Are you watching a ton of hockey these days? Is this something you like sitting down and PVRing a game or taking notes? What's going on?
I've been watching quite a bit. You know, I'm intrigued since the coaching change to see how things are going to go here in Calgary. Unfortunately, I got to keep an eye on the Philadelphia Flyers still. I might have mentioned that last time, but there is a family influence there. So I tend to watch hockey when I get a chance.
So what, your brother-in-law is a defender there, right?
Yeah, plays number 55, Nick Schultz. So got to keep tabs on him, see how he's doing.
They've been fun this year.
Is he any good?
I don't know. Well, coach doesn't seem to think so lately.
No, come on. Is he any good? I don't know if he's any good anymore.
You know, Schultz is still a great skater. He's still pretty young at heart, and he's solid. I mean, he was one of their best defenders last year. If you're looking for a guy just to help solidify your blue line, I think he's your guy.
They're deep there, too, all of a sudden. At least a lot of bodies.
13 minutes last night.
Radko Gudas is back from his suspension to start the year. They're that Manning kid who's been impressive out of the gate.
Yeah, I think he's feeling the effects of the extra guys. I'm not sure how close Del Zotto is too. You know, he had a big year for them again. They've put some faith back in McDonald again since he's come up. So there's definitely a challenge there for him. And now at age 34, he's hearing the word old.
Well, and you said it before. It seems like the 35 is now 30. When you guys played, it was like, okay, you're 35, now you're old. But it's like we saw Glenn Cross barely over 30. We see guys on PTOs. Like Versteeg had signed the day before the season started. What is he, 29? Like, this is crazy.
What is Glenn Cross doing?
I don't know. Riding a horse somewhere?
Like, why? Last year, he just quit.
Should have waited it out.
Yeah.
I was stunned by it. I still am. I mean, he's a guy that could still skate.
Yeah.
Okay, you weren't going to make as much, and to announce right away that no, I'm retiring, I'm done.
I know it seemed a little bit crazy to me. Maybe he was just ready. But I skated with him there. I was trying to make my big comeback, and we were skating together, spending some time in the dressing room together before the start of the season, and I just thought he'd ride it out, wait and see, injuries, not call it quits after 30 days or whatever it was. So
whatever. I don't
Well,
care.
I'll tell you what. He turned the page in a new chapter pretty quick there, and maybe he's not the kind of guy that could wait it out, because I don't know that he regrets it. He's moved on to chapter two, but you're right. There's more hockey left there, wasn't there?
Yeah. It seemed like it to me.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a young family too. He's got other interests, so maybe it's an easy transition for guys like that. It's not something where you got to hang on as long as you can.
You mentioned keep an eye on the Flames and the coaching change here. Those first six games, the team looks lost, and now all of a sudden, since then, they're pretty all right. 4-2, including some really good road performances in tough buildings. What have you seen, and what can you tell us about the new coach? Did you cross paths with him at all in your career?
No, I really know nothing about him. I just, you know, at the Charity Golf Classic there to start the year, I heard what he had to say. I liked what he had to say, but I mean, you hear a coach kind of do their thing at the start of the year, and they all seem a little generic to me. I was just interested to see how the team was going to come out and respond. You know, they've been pushed to the max the last couple of years
with
Bob Hartley. So I thought they're going to have a fresh look on life. They come out, like you say, they look a little lost, but I'm impressed. They haven't hit the panic button yet as a team, and they're starting to look pretty solid out there. It was like last night's effort, watched most of it. There were some ebbs and flows to the game where San Jose would start to take over a little bit, but they were in it the whole game. They were invested. It was a far cry from the home game against St. Louis that I got a chance to go to.
It's dreadful. Worst game of the year by a mile.
Oh, my goodness. I thought that if that's the way it's going to go and continue to go, that long season. But that was kind of the tipping point. It was like after that, they seemed to get things together.
Well, and there seems to be this, that was the game where they go to 1-4-1. And since then, it's 4 wins in 6 games. And since then, it's been tough buildings and much better efforts. The compete level's been through the roof. You look at the 2 games in Chicago, they've had the puck for the first 40 minutes more than Chicago had. Last night, again, the first 40 minutes. Do you see this as a group that can be a playoff team if they continue to play this way?
I think so. If they continue to get goaltending, which has started to come around, it got off to a little bit of a rocky start as well. If their defensemen start to do what they've been doing the last couple of years, who was together last night again?
Yeah.
The old number five and number and seven. It was inevitable. It's coming.
And then seven looked like he actually could play defense again. Like he looked lost for 5 games. And now he looked like he was, the most comfortable he's been. And I think that's just playing familiar spot with Giordano.
Yeah. And you got to remember, Brodes is still a young guy, right? Mm-hmm. He's looked upon now to lead the other guy that he's playing with out there. And that's a completely different role for him. He's out there with Gio. He can just go do his thing. And obviously, we see that's where he's pretty darn effective.
Yeah.
Did you understand that? I mean, that's there's two things that I can't make sense of. And I do like a lot of things about the coach and had a chance to meet him a few times well before he arrived in Calgary and liked the guy before he got here. But the breaking up of what legitimately was called one of the best pairs in the league, whether that was earned or not, at least the hype was there and the results were certainly there 2 years ago before Gio's injury. I couldn't figure out breaking them up. And then the other was, I just don't know, in today's NHL, we spent almost the whole morning talking about how fast the game is, that Grossman, of all people, gets a deal. But other than that, I don't have much to moan about from what he's done.
No, I think you split those guys up. You see how it goes. He experimented.
Failed.
Yeah, it was. Put them back together. You've got other, talented defensemen there, Dougie Hamilton and some of these. They're all fine on their own. Make some more pairs. Put them out there. Let them work through the kinks and then let them get going. But you need someone to, to spark your back end, because it was looking a little flat there to begin the season. Up front, the
top
young
line, top line, top line. I can't let you go any further. Okay. What's happening?
I don't know. I think they're just pressing the issue. I know that Johnny looks a little uptight out there. Lots of pressure. We've seen it multiple times throughout the league. The numbers come in, you get the numbers you want on paper, and then can you put the numbers back on the paper? It is not an easy thing to do.
It's all gravy when no one's expecting you to do it, but now when the expectation comes along.
It's huge. And at such a young age, these kids are still learning. Again, they're not seasoned veterans. They've only been in the league a couple of years, and it is, yes, the transition happens much faster, but these kids still have so much to learn, and it's all of a sudden weight of the world's on your shoulders.
I said it yesterday. I watch it now and I go, geez, 18 minutes, 82 games a year, doesn't seem hard. But then I remember, I'm like, why was I so tired all the time? Why was I so beat up? And why, do you remember or do you forget how hard it was when you're playing? Because I look at it now, I go, it's easy. Why couldn't I have been better? I should have been better. Look, 15 minutes a night, a guy's playing, it's nothing. But I forget how much it took mentally to get prepped, and how the travel,
there it is,
drags out of you, and your sleep patterns are all messed up, and your body's hurting. You forget about all those things.
Yeah, the physical part, I think everyone's body can handle that. You can get bag skated. Actually, near the end of my career, I actually didn't mind them. I wasn't playing as much. You get skated all over the place. You handle it. But when the mental drag weighs on you too, it affects you physically, it affects your sleeping patterns, like you say, everything. They have to coexist. You have to be in a good mental spot and then be treating yourself well physically to have success out there. And when that mental part of the game starts to tip, it is hard to get it back where it needs to be. It's one of the most difficult things. You have to be pretty strong in the head in this sport.
sorry to cut you off, but you mentioned Monahan and Gaudreau and the big money and living up to expectations. Where are you guys at on big money deals at entry level deals?
I had a little conversation with that or about that yesterday. I don't mind it, but they got to cut back on the years. I mean,
the term.
Yeah, make them earn it again. If you think they deserve it, see if it's a fit or not, because after that, you're kind of tying your hands as teams. If it doesn't work out, and there's been examples where it doesn't, then at least you're something you could maybe move on from, or something that you've got options anyways.
They always say term's the killer, because you can pay a guy too much money, but if it's gone soon, you can live with it. It's the ones that hang around for 6-8 years where you don't like the money that just kill it. So, for example, take us back to the summer. If you're Brad Treliving, are you entertaining the idea of a 3 or 4 year deal with these guys?
I like 3 as a number. I mean, it gives you a good look at what players can do. And if they haven't done it by then, and now you're all of a sudden, we look at a guy who's age 22, 23, maybe even younger than that. Well, at least they're getting to their mid-20s. And you should see, especially with a forward, what the end product could potentially look like. So I think 3 is a decent number.
Yeah, we're... In a perfect world.
The
yeah.
problem is, no.
Problem is our all rights, the, yeah, it all, it, it's a goofy, agency, so, yeah. And there will never be a perfect world. No. It's just not going to happen, so.
Did you have a point in your career where that happened to you when you talk about big deal, big expectations, increased role, or where you followed a good season that was unexpected and it became expected? Because that's what you talk about these guys going through right now.
Well, my first year here in Calgary was my biggest hurdle and biggest, you know, contract signing for me. I went from slowly working your way up to, at the time, the unrestricted free agency age was coming down from 31, 30, all of a sudden it's 29, 28. And that's when I was getting there. This is my first crack at being a UFA. Had some success in Tampa.
Don't remember that here. That's
there's been some guys paving the way before me. Jay McKee.
Oh yeah.
Willie Mitchell, you know, guys that are just defenders signing bigger
Brendan
deals.
Brendan Witt.
There's another
Jason
one.
Jason Smith.
Haha, the names are flying
defensive
now.
Defensive defenseman getting paid, right?
Yeah, so all of a sudden it's your opportunity. It happens. It's a change of scenery. It didn't help that I was in a dressing room full of guys that, you know, I'd battled on the ice just a couple years prior.
I was very nice to you.
Of course you were, Warren. You're nothing but a nice guy. But, you know, there's
good
a...
room.
That's a component of it too. For me, it was a team switch. It was overwhelming playing hockey in Canada instead of the States, large contract, a tough coach, a whole new dressing room. And mentally that was a very, very tough year, mostly because of the coach.
I was going to say the coach had to be a big piece of
it. No, was this Keenan's year? We don't need to dance around it.
Yes, it was iron.
And listen, if you went around and polled former players, this isn't like a 99% approval rating guy. This is a coach that's notorious.
Well, and he'd been gone forever and all of a sudden reappears in Calgary. It didn't go well for me either, but...
Was
it mental warfare, Corey? Like, that's one of the things that's
exactly
pushing buttons all the time?
That's exactly what it was. I'd come from a coach in Tampa that pushed you physically, but as far as the mental aspect, you knew what was expected of you. There were no games, and then this was head games, and it was difficult. It was something I'd never really experienced. It was a coach that wanted pushback.
It always seemed unnecessary, right? Yeah. He would make it that way just to,
you know, it was really neat for me. Not a big baseball fan, but you know, especially when the playoffs are on, I follow. I hear Joe Maddon. He has a policy in his locker room where, you know, no dress code, which, you know, you can argue
whatever
about that.
Yeah.
But let the players be comfortable. Let the players be where they need to be mentally. There's enough outside stuff to deal with. Let them just focus on playing the game and not all of the other stuff. I mean, great approach. Like,
I believe when they went from Chicago back to Cleveland for game 6 and 7, that's where Halloween fell. They're down 3-2 in a series as the favorite, can't lose again or their season's over with this drought hanging over them 108 years. And he says, yeah, I'd like all my players to dress up in costumes for the flight to Cleveland.
There you go.
Right?
Perfect. Keep it loose. Keep guys in a good spot mentally. I think that's fantastic. when you played your best hockey, Rhett, you're in a good spot. Yep. It's just happening.
Just go play. And that's why I always loved the playoffs, because it was go play.
Mm-hmm.
If you play, go play, and there's nothing else to think about.
Yeah, no downtime.
Leave
in between
it out there. Yeah, let's go. I don't need to worry about, I'm slow. No, did you win that game? No? Well, you better be better. You're done, right? Like, it was simple. I always enjoyed when it was just a simple approach. And I don't care. I think every player in the world, I think Keenan was a pretty, well, I think he was a pretty successful coach. But every player I've ever wanted to play for or played with, if you just make it clear what you expect from them and let them go do it, you're way better off. And
that's what it essentially came down to me. I had a horrible first year under him. Breaking point the next year. I went in and had some very kind words, and I'll give him credit, and I might have mentioned this before. I told him, leave me alone, let me play. If I'm still playing horribly, you know, 3 weeks from now, if you give me an actual chance to play, then you can do whatever you want with me, say whatever you want to me, and I'll give him credit. He did that. I started to play much better hockey. I relaxed again, and it started to come a lot easier, and I actually enjoyed my second year under him.
Yeah.
It's kind of tough to say. And had he come back and let me play again, I think I would have enjoyed it and been just fine. But when you're trapped, that's not a good feeling.
And it was the fact that you had to establish, it was like he had to establish that pecking order and that, and you had to go have the fight with them to get there. It seems ridiculous, and it's good that you did, and it improved it. But it's like, why did it get there?
Yeah, why did we have to go through this?
No, tell me about the Iron Man streak, because apparently that was something that fell at the wayside due to Keenan, and I don't know that it was popular.
Yeah.
Where were you at? Where did it rank? And then how shocked were you that it ended?
Well, I when
really getting into the old wounds here, aren't we? Yeah, just open this right back up.
It was I'd eaten a puck in Dallas, took one in the Chicklets, was playing with a bubble on. Team was still playing quite well. There seemed to be no issues until I had a rough go, one bad performance all of a sudden.
Anaheim. It was in Anaheim.
Oh, man. Yeah. That place is a killer.
Sunday, folks. 7:30 puck drop.
He said, you know, you can't play with that thing on. You're struggling. I got to sit you. And he made a whole bunch of excuses. But I don't know. Didn't sit really real well with me. I just thought he kind of made up excuses to shake up the lineup and change things up.
I told you I'd fake an injury.
Yeah. But
it's teamwork right there.
We've gone through this before. I got to see a highlight reel goal from the guy sitting beside me here. So it was worth it.
That's the infamous top shelf.
Top goal. Shelf, yeah. Baby. Top shelf. Is that my boy, Sarge? So I got to go top shelf.
And you were leading the NHL in terms of the Ironman streak at that point. Is that right?
Like, yeah, I think I was at leader? I was at 400 and some games, and defenseman at the time was Skrastens. He was at 5-something, and that his ended shortly before or after my streak. And so I think I would have been able to get past him without the scratch. But I've said this, I think it was last time I was in here. Then along came Jay Bomeister, so.
Yeah,
didn't really matter anyways.
You weren't getting to that.
No, we actually have heard this story before from Rhett's perspective, and we have it on tape. So let's go back. This is Rhett's great goal following your Ironman streak coming to an end.
So you're in the doghouse with the coach.
I'm not playing. Healthy scratch. Collecting the paycheck. Putting a smile on my face and trying to be a happy teammate. So we played in Anaheim, and Sarge sucked. And he'd played like 500 games in a row. So we're on the plane from Anaheim to Phoenix, and Keenan loses his marbles, comes back to the plane, and I sit across from Sarchi, and just berates Sarchi, and looks over at me and goes, "You're playing." I'm like, "Huh? Me?
How many games did you miss by that point?"
Oh, I had quite a few. And Sarchi had that Iron Man streak going, so I'm like, I tap Sarchi. I says, "Sarchi, I'll fake an injury." He's like, "I don't really care about it." In the back of my head, I'm going, "Man, maybe this is my chance. Make a big splash again." Pretty excited. Been out of the lineup for a long time. So, wouldn't you know it, first shift, on the ice, step into a one-timer, bam, top shelf. Brizgalov didn't even move. In and out, people are like, holy, this guy is good.
And it was, right? It was Hockey Night in Canada.
Yeah, I remember the game.
So, pretty excited, pretty happy with myself. We win the game on the bus. I'm kind of celebrating, having a few with Kipper in the back. By the time we get, it's a long drive from Glendale to the airport. So we kind of get into a few of them. So I was excited, had some adrenaline. So get on the plane, phone Big D, yapping Big D, leaving a message for Big D.
Daryl.
Did you see that?
Daryl Sutter.
Top shelf.
You're phoning the GM.
How am I not playing?
So you're feeling good at this point.
Earlier in the year, we had a rookie party in L.A. Me and Goddard showed up with Nacho Libre wrestling masks on. For some reason, this thing is still in my carry-on bag. And now I've had a few. Feeling pretty excited about myself. I decide that the cool thing to do would be to disrobe and throw on this mask. The next thing you know, I'm doing somersaults down the aisle, screaming out, top shelf, as the plane's taking off. So just picture, I had a nice tight tuck going down the aisle.
Top shelf!
Every time I'd roll over, I'd scream out, top shelf.
With nothing on but a Nacho Libre mask.
The Flames top shelf experience.
That's our boy, Rhett.
That is a vision imprinted in my memory that I will never, ever forget.
And you probably tried to forget it, and now it's come back.
Yeah, bleach that thing out.
I want to know, I was so canned on that. What was the reaction on that chart?
I was pretty sober.
You think?
You weren't celebrating my goal?
No, but I mean, if there's a way...
It's a big snipe.
If there's a way or to get over something that, you know, might have put you in a bad mood, that was it. I mean, it was an icebreaker. Even when I was sitting in the stands watching the game and watching that blistering slapper from the point go in the top corner, I mean, I was smiling because if it's got to happen to one guy... It was so enjoyable. And then on the plane, I laughed the whole way home. And he set the tone, and it was a fun ride home, even though, you know, could have been wallowing in my own sorrow. Who cares? Move on.
What a beauty.
Can't take things too seriously.
Oh, no. Life's too short.
Get in the room, huh? Get in the room. What a guy.
Jeez, I had a question I was going to... Oh, Jerome Engel. He was our assistant coach in Saskatoon. With the Blades, and he's been there forever, and he's still there, I think. And he influenced so many guys that came through that organization. The can opener, get them where the pads aren't.
What about my favorite was, and remember where your question and point is here. My favorite was when you line up for a draw, Corey, you see those laces, you take your blade and you plant it on the top of his laces, chop him right on the top of the foot. That'll slow him down.
I did that my whole career. Todd Bertuzzi used to snap every time because I would line up against him. Whack!
I can't see him snapping.
Oh, I'm
getting mad over something like that.
Water!
Another guy you
attributed back to
with.
Jerome Engel.
And so Jerome was a cop and he was tough back when he played junior hockey too. He played some minor pro, I think. And he was the guy that taught us how to fight, kind of, right? Like, he was, here's some tips for you. So Tony Twist was tough guy, right, in Saskatoon.
Spooky.
Link Gates coming to town. Ooh. Now, we're talking two heavyweights. And this is back in the day when junior hockey, the boys used to chuck them. So if Tony Twist goes to the advice, the hockey fighting guru that Jerome Engel is, he says, What can I do on this one? What do you think? We're going to have to fight him. Like, what's a good strategy? Beauf tells him, go to the body. So in the fight, I remember watching the tape. Tony Twist is just chucking body shots, taking them in the head. That was the stupidest advice ever.
So maybe don't go to him for... fighting advice or backward skating was another classic. I mean, when he got to demonstrate,
it was pretty to watch.
It was priceless.
Picture a 5'10", 240-pound, like just one of those thick, stocky guys.
Very barrel-chested. Very barrel-chested.
That was,
yeah, that's where we got our advice. That was our skating coach.
Yeah. I don't know that McDavid has had that same advice growing up.
Speaking of McDavid, so the first two of the games of the year, Flames play the Oilers, and McDavid, I'm watching him, and I'm going, I don't think I could play against that guy. Like, I'm thinking in my head, I watch the games, and I'm, okay, well, this is what I would do against that guy. You know, kind of play it out in my head, and I'm watching him, and I'm going, no clue.
My biggest comparable, never got to play against him, Nathan MacKinnon. Just as far as straight speed, I don't think Nathan, he's a good puck handler. He's got a wicked wrist shot. I used to see in Denver one-on-ones on the practice sheet. They post it before every practice. I'd start to get the heavy sweats. I'd start to think, what am I going to do today? How am I going to cheat my way out of this drill without getting completely embarrassed? And I'm telling you, it was tough. You'd just have to get going as fast as you can backwards.
And hope.
And then hope that you can get in front of them somehow. Maybe he'll fumble the puck. Maybe something. We used to do the drill too. Defensemen in opposite corners, forwards in opposite corners. We'd have to do one full lap around our circle while they're winding it up the whole length of the ice.
Catch them coming at you.
Get cross corner to the, actually get up into the center ice circle, at least get your skates in there, and then pick them up coming back.
Oh,
he coming was up. Already taking a shot by the time I was getting out of my pivot.
Jeez.
In the center ice circle. Like, ridiculous. And
so he was the fastest. Who was the best player you played with or against?
Oh,
I mean, there's lots of great players, but is there one that stands out? I always find that the guys I played with, like, I had a better feel because you always had to go up with.
Yeah, you get to see them all the time. The guy that drove me bananas that had my number, and he just comes to mind right away, and it was always down low, was Jeremy Roenick. You know, and I caught him mid,
yeah,
ending, going towards the end of his career. He just had my number, ran my show. Every time we were down low, it was like the puck was glued to his stick. I could body him. He would come out of the corner. He would have 1 to 2 points every night we would play against them. I'd look bad. I'd be a highlight reel on the video the next day. So that guy drove me crazy in that regard. I mean, you say, who's the best player? Mario Lemieux?
Rhett's got a lot of Mario stories where it doesn't end well.
He did one on. He made a move on me once. I'm in the corner in Buffalo. And I'm like, I got him. There's nothing he can do. I have him. Goal. What? I still don't even know what he did. So I don't even know what he did. I'm staring in the corner. The puck's going in. What?
Where were you running into Roenick? Because you guys were opposite conferences most of your career.
Philly.
When he was in Philly,
that's where I got a big chunk of him there.
So you had the 3 years there.
Mario Lemieux. Never got to play against Wayne Gretzky, but Mario Lemieux, he comes back out of retirement. He's going to play, you know, huge day for the league. I'm so excited. I'm finally going to get to play against him. My thought as a kid growing up, and this is my solution for everything, well, if you can't contain him, you can't skip, just run him over. That'll take him out of the game.
Yeah.
Just try and run him over. It's a little bit old school thinking. I'm like, why doesn't someone just run over Gretzky? Why don't guys just go run over Lemieux? I mean, him out of the game.
How hard can it be, right?
I got out there against Mario Lemieux. I'm bumping up against him on the power play. I can't move this man.
No,
his elbow is at my chin level. It's crazy how big he is. You do not have perspective until you're out there on the ice. And I bumped into him a few times. Didn't go over that well for me.
No.
And then it didn't go over that well because you got four guys all
Stevens
over you.
Stevens or someone's mad. Yeah. Hey. And talk
everyone, it. Jágr was another guy that everyone said that. You don't realize how big of a man he is until you had to try to defend him.
No, he can take care of himself, that guy. He's just so strong on his skates. And
still going.
Yeah. And the reach, too. Like, you think you get a piece of him, you get a leg. He's still got the puck on his stick, making him move around you. So hard to contain. One of the best battles I saw was my first crack at the playoffs, Tampa Bay versus Washington, 2003. And Kabina made it kind of his sole job to battle Jaromir Jágr the whole
series. I'm interrupting.
He made life miserable for him.
I was in Australia watching you.
What?
What?
Yes.
That was your off-season trip?
We missed. We were in, me and Brian Campbell and Max Afinogenov had gone to Australia, and I was in the hotel, and I turned the TV on, and it was Washington versus Tampa Bay.
There you go. That was, for me, we beat them that year. Jager, it was like winning the Stanley Cup. Then we got to play, I think it was, did Jersey win that year? I know we played them the next round. And
Jersey beat Anaheim in the final.
We didn't really even care. We had beat Washington, and then it was like men versus boys when New Jersey was playing against us. We had so much to learn. That was a top quality hockey team.
So Dave Andrechuk, I played with him in Buffalo for a year. One of my favorites. Mm-hmm. And a guy that no one thinks of. I say, Dave, oh, yeah, I played for the Leafs, right? Yeah. Well, he played 1,600 games, had, what?
Incredible.
640 goals, almost 1,400 points, and tons of fun.
So much fun.
How important was he on that Stanley Cup team?
Oh, he was the, you know, one of the largest pieces. He came into our dressing room. He solidified our team. He taught young guys how to be pros. He taught them how to be pros away from the rink, and he taught them how to be pros at the rink. I'm telling you, Andy had his fun. Oh, he had fun everywhere.
Bud Light.
One of my favorite things is, and this is a little off topic, but I played with him for a little while, two seasons. He decides he's going to quit the Bud Light, and he's going to be a better player for it. He quits for two or three weeks. He is god awful. He's like, sorry, boys. He makes an announcement, stands up. I got to go back to it. I am hurting the team. Anyways, Andy was one of my favorite guys to practice against. Power play penalty kill. I used to eat his elbows in front of the net. Just eat them. And you wonder how this guy had this many power play goals. He parked himself in front of that net. You could not move him. And he was as hungry scoring a goal in practice as he was in a game.
He was one of those guys, and Dino Cicerelli was the same way, where he would be in front after practice tipping pucks, and if you didn't actually shoot it, he'd be mad at you.
Yeah,
like,
blast it at
shoot
him.
It, you idiot. Like, I will tip it or get out of the way, or it will hit me, and I will be fine.
You think of how many times he probably got hit with a puck in his career in practice and in a game?
Oh.
Like, because that's where he was. He knew where his limitations were.
He couldn't have skated
like the rest of us. So he's like, get to a spot where he can score goals.
He was and unbelievable.
His hand eye, it was amazing.
You can't get a kid to go stand in front of the net now.
Well, you were yelling at Joe Colburn for 2 years about it.
Joe Colburn, no problem, be a 25 goal scorer if he would just go stand, do that.
What's the percentage? 70 some goals are scored from right
within
there,
10 feet or whatever?
70 some percent.
Well, you look at Monahan, how many times does he score? 5 feet from the crease. That's all he does.
Yeah. Go there and stay there and don't be denied.
Well, Dino Cicerelli was the perfect case. I mean, 1,200 points, 600 goals. And as you guys said, like, he's not wowing you in a skills competition. He's just dirty spots all night.
Greasy.
Yeah, it's impressive to watch. Felt bad for old Dave Andrechuk when his shoulder pads got stolen. He'd had those things since birth.
Forever?
Yeah.
The antiques.
We come into the dressing room one morning and they're gone. I think the police were involved.
Really?
They looked for 2 weeks. Maybe not the police, but they combed the rink.
Somebody stole Andy's.
That's all we can figure out. I don't know if someone
prank
could
gone
come
wrong
forward
or what?
And fess up, but it was a devastating time in his career.
That's a heartbreaking day.
He's got a long face already, but it would be extra long that day.
Jorge, pleasure having you here. Thanks for coming.
Are you kicking him out?
No, I just got a couple more for you before we do kick you out. What's keeping you busy in Calgary these days? Apparently, you got a boy, Rhett's age, who's lacing him up himself now.
Coaching some novice hockey in the Bow River Association. I coached 2 years at Timbits, and now I'm coaching him.
Lots
of fun because we're actually playing hockey.
Yes.
Teaching him the rules of the game, and that's keeping me busy, running my girls all over. Indoor soccer season just started. I've got a wicked once-a-week badminton match.
Ooh.
You know?
Twinkle toes.
Is that the right amount of time to recover and be ready for the next match?
Yep,
is that what it is?
Pretty much at this age.
What's the record?
Doing pretty good this year. There's a lot of days where there's no suffered losses. Jeff Sanderson, if you're listening.
Bring it on.
I want another shot at the title.
Is he the champ?
He's got the belt.
He's the self-proclaimed champ.
the only person I've heard that he's beaten so far is Brendan Morrison. But I took him on last year again. I was coming out of a serious hiatus from the sport, and he dusted me single-handedly. Right after we're done and he had kind of wiped his hands with me, he decides to tell me that one of his best friends owns some racket club somewhere, and you know, he's probably been getting lessons his whole life.
That's a little unfair.
I said that before.
I'm going to take another run at him. Yeah. I got wiped up in tennis by Regeer last year, so I put that pursuit on the back.
No tennis?
So this is my new...
Badminton. Yeah. This a little easier on the body.
And how often do you see this big Logan?
I get to see him usually, you know, once every couple weeks. So we're very studious these days.
Good.
Trying, you know.
Educating ourselves.
Yeah. And so there's a little bit of that going on, too.
Best and worst things about retirement?
Best thing? Getting to play a little more golf. Love that. Love the free time for, I was just sports crazy growing up. So to play all the things, go skiing, that's what really occupies my time. Worst thing, having all that time some days and sitting there and,
You're not doing something with it, it's no good.
It can be depressing.
Yeah.
Yeah. As much as it is, it's like, and you watch all these guys still playing the sport that you love to play your whole life. That's the toughest thing for me right now.
I don't know how you'd fill that void. I mean, you go from not only being like a rock star, but you've been focused on one thing since you're about 12 years old. And it's not like a normal career trajectory where a lot of guys go through this, but not until they're 60. You guys are going through this in your young 30s when you're still in your life peak, but not your hockey peak in a way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's for me, what I miss about the sport the most is... just the competition.
Yeah.
Banging your head around every day, getting to run over your own teammates someday if you're having a qualm with them, then going out and being physical against everybody else. That's the challenge I enjoyed. You know, the being in the spotlight and some of that stuff that goes with it, you know, take it or leave it, but I just miss the competition. And that's where I struggle to put that back in my life.
That's
right
where
now.
You need Sanders.
That dressing room camaraderie and going on the ice and competing.
Yeah. Going to the, knowing every day that you're going to get up, go in and get beaked. I mean, who doesn't want to get up for that?
Yeah.
That's right. A little friendly ribbing.
Yeah, we're going to get harassed about now.
Yeah.
Pleasure having you here. That was really cool. We thank you for doing it. And
if you're ever too bored, there's always an extra mic.
And we need an update on this badminton match. You're talking about, you know, needing that sword to go to battle. There's your competition.
I'm kind of throwing it out there. So
if anyone knows,
if there's a response.
Jeff Sanderson, we're calling you out. Sarich wants a piece of you.
I think I fine-tuned my game where... I'll give you a good match this time.